Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Under Review podcast with me, Thomas.
And me, Paul.
And firstly, we've got to start off with an apology because we are late in getting this episode out. You know, our many fans are probably devastated that
crying.
Yeah,
can't get to sleep at night. Haven't had the pod fix.
I think getting to sleep at night, this is a good one because, you know, it's a bit dry. So,
it's very, very dry.
But, you know, that's fine. But we are back now after our week away.
A little absence.
Yeah. And so this week we are going to focus on the consoles car.
Oh boy, we got a good one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we promised at the end of the last episode it's going to be a good one, and it will be. But I wanted to give a shout out at the start of this episode to the LA Noir subreddit, r/LA Noir. Yeah, give it a clap. I mean, the thing about it is, right, I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, it's rich from us as we're doing a podcast about LA Noir. But it just amazes me that there are still so many people out there that care about this game to actually...
When did it release? 2008,
wasn't it? 2008?
Yeah.
It's pretty old.
And it's basically dead by Rockstar standards.
Yeah, but like there's daily posts on there.
Which is great.
And
Keep it up.
You know, there's good memes on there. There's people doing a lot of free roam and discovering stuff that
we haven't even seen half of the stuff they're posting about.
So go and check it out. reddit.com/r/LA Noir. It's pretty good. But we are going to get into today's mission, which is on the traffic desk. It's our second mission on the traffic desk. I actually got it here. It's our first DLC case as well.
Ooh.
Yeah. A bit odd how it like organises them, but it kind of makes sense with this one. We'll get into why.
Yeah, I'm glad it doesn't play out at the end.
Yeah, it wouldn't make any sense if you got to the end and it was like traffic all over. But yeah, so this case, we have our briefing at the start with Captain Leary.
Yeah.
And he basically says there's a Packard that's been abandoned in an empty lot between Olive Street and Second. You know, yeah, so I'm getting the street names down.
Wow.
I'm getting really engrossed.
Deets.
Getting into the deets. So, yeah, so he doesn't actually give us much information in the intro.
No.
Like, all we know is that there's a lost car. But when you leave the room right at the start, he says that, like, so your mission is just, there's an abandoned car, right? But the other people that left the room, there's an organised crime racket, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, so we've got this mission. And they've got the really cool thing. But, yeah. What we're going to do now is actually get into the mission, talk about our first thing. So when we go over to the crime scene, talk about what happens. There are some interesting characters in this one.
Some very interesting people, yeah.
There are some oddballs, some grade
stick
A
balls.
There are some stick balls in this episode. So yeah, look forward to that. We're going to get stuck in.
Car, head towards the abandoned Packard. But before you get there, there's a lovely little update on how Adrian's doing. Do you remember Adrian?
Breaking news report. Yeah, so Adrian Black, for those who don't remember, was the victim, quote unquote, in our last episode, who definitely wasn't dead and definitely was cheating on his wife.
And you're going to get an update, which is really nice. Quoted the broad in Seattle threw him out. So Adrian's gone, I'm gonna fake my death, gonna move in with this lovely lady to be turned around and basically given the hook and be told to get out. But his wife's gonna take him back. Now
you feel for the
woman, you're like, this person had like we're basically having an affair and he was gonna move away and you've just gone, he's got my back in, come on.
They had an interesting conversation about it. I can't remember which way around it was, but one of them was like really trying to sympathize with his wife. Probably Cole
probably.
And then Bukowski was just kinda like, why would she do that?
Yeah.
You know, just chuck him out. But I guess different times.
Yeah, I think Carl says pride comes before fail, and he says he's talking from experience. So,
well, I mean, we know a bit more about Cole than maybe the audience does. You know, maybe that's fact, actually.
It's a little bit foreshadowing.
Yeah, a little bit. So
anyways, you arrive at the airlock, and there's lovely packets.
First reporting. I always write this down because I think it's important to, you know, give credit to the bottom level of the police force. Officer Houlihan is
Houlihan.
Houlihan is the main guy who's like, this is my crime scene. He shows you to the packet. So what we got?
The packet's, you know, propped up on some concrete kind of cinder block type things, isn't it? It's taken a wheel off.
It's up on bricks.
It's up on bricks.
And I wrote down about the crime scene, right? So just to paint a bit of a picture, there's litter everywhere. You know, there's bricks all over the place, so I'm not surprised it's up on bricks. There's like, I've just put stuff left about. Like,
I found a baseball bat.
There's a baseball. There was like a coffee cup. And then there's no grass. Like, I noticed there, it was just like really scraggy kind of...
just flat.
So when they said at the start, an abandoned lot, I think so. It was just like these people's back gardens. I don't know where a house would have gone, but it was just kind of like...
it was there.
These people live in really odd, small, little wooden houses, don't they? They don't have a proper road.
Right, no.
It's just sort of... yeah, but that's the crime scene. And then, so Paul, what's up with it? What do we find about it?
Well, going around and you find out that it's owned by the Argentine embassy. Excellent. Sorry, Argentine.
Yeah,
embassy.
Argentine.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Apologise.
Yeah, there you go. And it's got little flags on the front.
It's got one flag.
Got one flag, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, the other one's been nicked.
It's been ripped off. Have a look around in the boot. No spare tyre. Spare tyre's gone as well.
You notice that as well. Yeah. So Cole doesn't actually point that out.
No.
But I was like, the spare tyre's missing. And actually, it's really important that we bring that back up later because something makes sense because of that. Oh. I'm glad you noticed. So there's no spare tyre in the back and there's no tyre on the front, like right or left.
Yeah.
So there are two wheels missing.
Two wheels missing. It's got no number plates.
Yeah, diplomatic plates have gone.
And they are vamoose. That's kind of about...
that's pretty much it. There's no blood in this one. There's no murder or anything. It is all like vehicle theft related stuff. And Cole says that it's not a... like organized gang kind of thing because they didn't take it to a workshop to like properly strip it down. They left the registration like card still on the steering wheel column, So, you know, these aren't professionals. These are just low-level crooks. and then, my God, there he is with his beautiful, shining, bald head. This guy...
shit-faced crooks.
Yeah, absolutely. Our first person of interest is...
who is a standout character in his own. If you're going to do a series about someone, I want it to be the Oswald Jacobs show.
Oswald Jacobs, 65-year-old male. I mean, I've written the...
sweater vest, 10 out of 10. Come on, like, when you look at the sweater vest, right? It's open done up, right? And it is green and white.
Look at the way the guy lives, the place he lives, and he doesn't care about his appearance. You know, this guy is
sitting on the porch.
Yeah, he's just sitting there on his porch. And he had a goofy walk as he kind of came down the stairs. You know, he feels pretty important. Oh God, Oswald Jacobs. So I've got some quotes from Oswald Jacobs.
Oh, here we go.
He talks about stickball.
Stickball.
He says, "I'm sick of those kids playing stickball outside of my lawn. Constantly asking for their ball back." I mean, that space is so small that he's in. I'm not surprised that their ball's, you know, always going into his windows and stuff. He also says, "Don't get impatient, Sonny, when you try and ask
him." We try and press him for questions.
And he's describing, so he does give us some information. He does describe, like, what has happened, okay? And two bits that really stood out for me were... he says there were these Hispanics, is his description. And then he says they were speaking Mexican. Yeah. And then Cole presses him, and I loved it. He went, "Do you speak Spanish?" And he goes, "No, I don't." You know, he's just like...
he's a piece of work, isn't he?
He really is. And Paul, you go through, because it's one of my favourites. what does he say about the perp's car? So not the packet, but the car belonging to this criminal
and
element.
A candy apple red paint job.
A paint job you won't forget. Yeah, a candy apple red. He says it's this beautiful old Ford. And you can tell he's having a bit of nostalgia. He's going back into his youth when this thing was probably, you know, a new sort of car. And yeah, so what we get from him, basically, is three men. He says three. Mexicans so have used their candy apple red speedster to come and put the car here and start nicking bits off of it. And he also kind of tries to hide something.
Yeah.
So he gets pressed a bit in the questioning, in the interrogation. Yeah. Now, I think it was here...
I was stripped apart. The last question.
Yeah.
Is a really... I had to use an intuition, and even the intuition from the community side, there was...
It was pretty split.
It was like 2%.
Yeah, I also used an intuition on that question, because it was hard to read it, because we had stuff like the missing flags, and I couldn't remember from when we played the mission ages ago if that was what it was that we need to press in on. So I used an intuition there as well, but it was doubt. And then he reveals that he stole a book from the car, and he was reading through it. And now this book is creepy as heck.
Yeah.
This book belongs to Juan Francisco Valdez, who we're not going to get into yet. We're not going to get into him yet, because he deserves his own time.
Wow.
But my God, this book is creepy, right?
Yeah.
So, to explain to those listening, this book has a list of names, and then it says stuff like, likes cherry-flavoured candy, or slim hips, full lips. So this is a really creepy book where he's obviously talking about little boys that he's interested in, this Juan Francisco Valdez. And, you know, my initial thing is, why was the old man just merrily sitting reading through this and didn't think, I should probably tell the police about this? And then, so at this crime scene, so basically there's not actually much to do here. You just look at the car, find out what the bits are missing, and you interview Oswald Jacobs. And he... and you find a wrench on the floor for the Dewey brothers.
Yeah.
Which
is kind of
a... And there's a police phone at this... It's a really odd little cul-de-sac, and there's a police phone there. So obviously, you know, a crime hotspot. And then, so you talk to the wonderful, the absolutely amazing, shuffling her papers around, working at the speed of light. She's doing...
She's on it.
She's doing all the
good stuff. Employee of the year. Not even month. I'm going to say year.
A century. I mean, literally, you say, I need the details for a Dewey Brothers mechanic. She shuffles two pieces of paper around. Not even like that. More just like, a small little bit. And then she's like, yep, Dewey Brothers on this street. It's just like, what filing system do you have that is the second piece of paper?
She's just on it.
But then you ring this number from the book. So we're going back to the creepy book, you know. We're getting back into it. You ring the... There's a number for Michigan, like 5, 6, whatever. And then you ring it, and this woman answers, and you're expecting a guy or a boy. And she's like, no, the guy you're looking for is my son. He's in school.
Has he done something wrong?
Yeah, and that's when it hits. Like, if you didn't get it from the text in the book, if you just skip past the book, that's when you get it. And it's like... The interesting thing is, and I think he probably did it just not to alarm her, is he doesn't actually say anything about it. He just says, sorry, I've got the wrong person. But I think Cole knows.
Yeah, he definitely knows. He's got a child of his own.
Yeah, so I don't know. That was just a really odd bit, but that was really creepy. So now we've got the information we've got. Dewey Brothers somehow involved. That's what we got from the wrench on the floor. From Stickball Man, Oswald Jacobs, we know that there's a candy apple red Ford somewhere out there that's doing this, and they were Hispanics. And he tells us, well, he gives us the book, so we've got some...
You've got the evidence mounting up at the moment.
Yeah, we've got some bits. This is just a really bizarre sequence, though. But then, I think we went different ways after this, is that right?
Yeah, I went to the Dewey Brothers.
Oh, no, so we went... Okay, so we're still going the same way. So okay, it gives you an option at this point. I've written that down. It says you can either go to the Dewey Brothers dealership, or you get a call that says... Because when you're on the phone to our wonderful friend, I don't know her name. She's from R&I. You say, have you got any messages? And she says, yes, Juan Francisco Valdez, who's the guy with the creepy book. is in the police station. So I was like... Demanding an audience. So I was like, I'll leave him for a bit. You know, I'm sure...
I'll leave him to the side.
I'm sure he's got better things to be doing. So I head to the Dewey Brothers. You head to the Dewey Brothers. So what we'll do is, in the next part, we'll go through what the heck is at this dealership. And there's another colourful character there. And so we'll get into that in just a minute.
So you pull up to a second, well, like a garage, and there are packards kind of littered, all for sale outside this lovely garage.
Lovely? I don't know about that.
It's pretty clean. Cleanliness is quite...
It doesn't look like it's in a great part of town. I mean, I didn't do the driving. I'm skipping the driving.
Chauffeur.
You know, I've got to check my notes, you know, all that sort of stuff. I don't have time for that. But yeah, you arrive at the garage.
So you arrive and there's packets kind of for sale everywhere. And this guy, it's very, I put down here, very full of himself. Very sure of himself.
Very large gentleman.
Very larger than life.
Yeah.
Kind of waltzes out of his lovely showroom to greet you and your partner and kind of says... Can I interest you in a packet?
It's really cringy though, because he's like, I bet you were just driving by and saw yourself in that four-door packet or whatever. And it's just like...
But that's like the 50s technique, isn't it? It's like...
It is.
See yourself in it, become it, be it, type thing. So yeah.
I mean, one of the things I've just written, it was really cringy, the start of that.
Yeah. Because kind of Cole just shuts him down and goes, ah, LAPD, type thing. Yeah. He's like, can I help you, gentlemen?
You can tell by Bukowski's general face and body language that he has dealt with one too many used car salesmen.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't like him. So then what happens? So we've talked to him for a bit. What happens after that?
So you find out his name is William Dewey.
Yep, 46-year-old male.
There you go. And you kind of... You just ask him kind of basic questions. But before that, you go... And you take the wrench, if you would, where you found the crime scene, and say, oh, you know, have you got a... Oh, what's his name?
Are you talking about... Oh, God, I haven't got his name written down.
Is it Delgado?
Gabriel Delgado.
There we go.
Yeah.
Got there in the end. Bloody hell.
Professionalism.
Professionalism. Rehearsed. So you say, oh, have you got a Gabriel Delgado? Does he work for you? And you go to this lovely little puzzle, very straightforward puzzle, very straightforward.
I mean, right, so we've had a puzzle in LA Noir before. We had the weird, like, juggling pipes puzzle. Now we've had a puzzle where you need to put wrenches in the right place.
Yeah, by size.
I mean, surely, right? I mean, surely Bukowski, a man who's worked in traffic for a long time, knows the wrench's size. He said, that's a 3/4, it's a red bit of tape, it must be that. But no, you have to go through and manually match them all up. And what does that tell us?
It tells you that the wrench belonged to Delgado.
One thing, actually, I didn't mention this in the last section, but we know Gabriel's name already because he was in the book.
Yes.
His name's on the last page of the book. So Gabriel is a name we know, and then... William Dewey tells us he's got an employee called Gabriel whose wrench happens to match the one at the crime scene. So then we go on to William Dewey and we interrogate him outside his dealership.
Yeah.
This was difficult.
This was very difficult because he's a used car salesman.
Absolutely. And one of the things that actually, I mean, we talk about this game outside of the podcast as well because we're just sad. But we were talking about how one of the hardest missions in this game, and we will get to it when we get to Homicide, it's about actresses, and actually it makes sense that it's really difficult to read them because it would be in real life.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the used car salesman. And so I think they've done this really well.
But that's literally their job, isn't it? Back in the day, you know, it was
to
kind
lie
of...
lie through their teeth to, and look
to get
like
your
they, you
know. Yeah. So I got the first question wrong. I'm not afraid to say that because it was stare.
What was the first question? I can't remember.
Just basically, does Valdez...
Does he work
associate with you, and have you got any...
Oh, yes, so he's talking about Juan Francisco Valdez, And the answer was lying. It was in the book, wasn't it? Yeah.
But the stare got me. His stare.
He did look like he was telling the truth.
He stared at you for a good, like, 10 seconds.
I was like, I'm not going to put up with this guy's nonsense. And I thought, his name's in the book, so I'm just going to go for him.
Yeah.
And I remember, because the music goes... You know, and it, that last note, I was like...
The last note is pumping
in the air. So I was like, yes, I've got that one right. And then getting to the second question, I was like, Jesus, now I don't know what I'm talking. But he didn't tell the truth once. It was lie down down.
Yeah.
So the guy is just following. And even, like, he was like, do you have any information about Gabriel? And the guy was just like, no, not really. And it's just like, you must have employment records or address or something. And it turns out it's because he hires illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
And we also find out that he tried to bribe Valdez.
Yep.
This guy's a bit of a criminal in himself.
Yeah.
And my favourite Cole line, and it's one of my favourite lines from the whole game, is when you press doubt on the second question, he goes, and I know a shyster when I see one. And he just nails this guy to the wall. It's brilliant.
But no, with the wrench that is missing, I went on a limb to do doubt. Again, it's the stare. Like you said, they've integrated really well into this game of having someone that just... It's hard to read, because obviously when you play the opening mission, kind of like, that teaches you all about reading their faces and their eyes. This guy just stares right at you, and from the get-go, you're kind of taught that that is a truth.
One of the things that's difficult is that the DLC missions do this so much better than the original missions. And so actually, even though it's only our second mission in the game, our second proper mission, it's actually really difficult to get those bits. But... We don't really... So from William Dewey, we get that. There's some more links to Valdez. We get the address, if we get that question right, for Delgado. So now you've got a choice. And this is where I know we have a difference, because we've talked about this. So you can either go to Central Police Station, because Valdez is still waiting there. He's still waiting.
Still waiting.
Or you get the chance to go to the Delgado household and confront them and see what's going on. So I went down the route of... He's been waiting a while. I should probably go to the police station. But Paul, what did you do?
I just shouted at him. I was like, ah, you can do whatever you want. And I went to the Delgado residence.
So, we've got...
Because I want to see the Candy Apple Red Speedster.
That's true. I mean, to be honest, Oswald Jacob talked to... He laboured over this beautiful car, this Candy Apple Red paint job that you won't forget, you know.
What do you want to see? Do you want to see a guy going to shout at you, or do you want to see a Candy Apple Red Speedster?
I
went for a Speedster.
I was up for the argument. So, what we'll do, because, funnily enough, if you do Paul's method at this point, you never get to see...
You never get to any interaction with this guy whatsoever. No.
So, he's just pushed to the side.
Yeah, I was like, I don't need you, bye-bye.
So, Paul never spoke to Valdez, but I did, and so I'm going to take you on a tour of Central Police Station. The funny thing is, so, I've got to explain this to you as well, because you haven't seen this. So you come, Paul's adjusting himself in his chair, as he said. So you go to Central Police Station, and I can't remember the big guy that got kind of mans the front
desk. Oh, he's great. I don't know his name.
Yeah, he said, he says, you know, like, he's basically just messing with this guy. He's saying, you know, he's making jokes about him when you walk in. And then you go in and you speak to Juan Francisco Valdez, and... Immediately, the guy's like, I insist on you using my full title, Consulate General.
Wow.
And Bukowski just mocks him the whole way through the thing. He's like, Your Highness and Your Greatness and all this kind of stuff. And he's just so sarcastic, Bukowski's brilliant. And so Valdez, all we know about him so far is he likes, you know, little kids. Like, that's all we know about him so far. Like and he's the Consulate General of Argentina. So, yeah, basically, Cole says something that I'm not going to repeat. He says, you bleep young boys, Valdez. And Valdez loses it. He's like, this is going to cause an international incident. You've got no proof on me and all this. And then you just talk about the book. And Cole goes through those comments. And hearing him say them just makes him even more creepy when he's like, full lips, slim hips. You know? It's just gross. And... then the best part about that is Valdez then tries to bribe Cole. And he's like, I'm sure if I slip you a bit of money, we can forget about this. And it was just so creepy. But one of the other quotes he had, at the start, you ask him a question and he's obviously lying. And so you know, Cole, as he does, gets really threatening immediately if something's not quite right. And the Consulate General, Valdez, says, there's no call for violence. And it was just so diplomatic when Cole is like screaming in his face. And basically from this interrogation, he lies. I think it's like doubt, lie. I didn't use any intuition here because he has a really obvious lying face. So Valdez was a lot easier. But yeah, that's the interview of Valdez. And basically from that, all you really get is that there is a relationship between him and Gabriel in some way. From what I gather, he tried to coerce Gabriel Delgado, but he was having none of it. And he was like, I even offered to pay. You know, it's so creepy. And then the best part, so you walk out of this interrogation and the guy at the front desk is like, oh yeah, I'll let him go in a few hours. And they actually hold him in the interrogation room. But yeah, so that's what you missed. You missed a very interesting interrogation with a paedophile. who is the Consulate General. And actually, I think this is a good time to talk about my trivia point because it links to that. So, my trivia point, and there was not a lot for this mission.
I was going to say.
Yeah, as you can see on my notes, I was looking at my notes kind of suspiciously, there is three bullet points. One of them was the introduction.
DRCK.
Yeah. basically, the trivia for this is the address on the slip in the car for the Consulate General was the actual address for the Argentine Embassy in 1947 in LA.
That's cool.
That is fact, and that is the only interesting piece of trivia from this mission. But, right, so now we've caught up with each other.
Yeah.
I've had the extra step, but we've caught up with each other. So now we're off to see the Delgado residence. And, yeah, we're going to get onto that next. Paul's going to take us through what happened.
Policia, do you understand? Right, so basically, Seth Bukowski is a piece of shit for saying, of course you do. Right, so you've got to the Delgado residence, and Anna Rodriguez, right, this lovely lady, opens the door. And
pregnant lady. Yeah, yeah.
And Bukowski is just being a knobhead, basically being very, very sarcastic and kind of detrimental to who she is. It's like, she understands you because she lets... She lets you in and kind of says...
Put on my notes, Bukowski racism.
Yeah, I mean...
I thought that was just really odd. But, you know, it's timely. Neither of them are very nice to her. So Anna Rodriguez is the partner of Gabriel Delgado. He's not home. But she's the partner. 22-year-old female. Got to get those in. Cole isn't very nice to her either. One of the threats he makes to her is, I'll send you and your baby to jail. Then he says, and I haven't written this down, but then he says something about like...
taking the child away and stuff like that. Yeah.
And you'll only be able to see your baby through bars.
Bars and everything.
And it was like, okay, Cole, we get it. You want to, you know, upset this woman.
Chill out a little bit.
So we go to the Rodriguez household.
Yep.
I've written out some notes about the Rodriguez, the Delgado residence household. Well, they've got different surnames because they're not married. These are pretty low-end apartments.
Yeah.
Like, the paint's peeling off the wood. There are three, like, Hispanic guys outside who I thought were going to interact with me, but they didn't.
You're quite cool, I think. Would enjoy.
But it's this really low-end building. But then, did you notice how it had, like, two pillars out front?
Yeah.
That were, like, really fancy. It didn't make any sense because the building looked like it was, like, falling apart.
It was just made out of, like, wood.
Yeah, it was just this, like, really soft, shuffling wooden kind of apartment. It was, like, one floor. But it was just really odd. But yeah, what do we find in the Delgado residence? So we have a look around.
So you look around, kind of come in. First thing I saw, I don't know if you saw, was the arch and...
Oh, yeah.
Argentinian flag. I mean, if you're going to keep a souvenir...
That's that obvious. You know, he's broken it off. No. So we were talking about how the car only had one flag. The other one's been broken off. And
you find it...
In his kitchen.
In his kitchen.
No, not even his kitchen.
On the dining room table.
Yeah, dining room
in
table.
In like a candlestick holder or something. So you find that, you're like, well... This is directly like links him straight to it. And then you wander about and you find kind of little drops. That is, there has someone has been there as well, not just Aaron.
Breakfast plates.
First, so you got the breakfast plates, which comes into it.
Now, we were talking about this before. She left the kettle on the whole time.
Yeah, it's a nice touch.
Yeah, but That's very dangerous. This kettle's on. If you're looking around that apartment for 5 minutes, I mean, I went out, so you can go out the back door and there's like a little kind of shed garage thing. I was out there for a couple of minutes. The kettle's still going when I get back up. She doesn't care.
Okay. That whistling, though. Oof. I'd drive anyone crazy, wouldn't I?
Now, one of the things I did is I accidentally knocked on door 4.
Oh, I didn't know.
When you knock on door 4, this guy shouts at me and he's like, "My daughter's just gone to sleep, get out of here." And yeah, so don't do that.
Okay.
Don't be a bad cop and knock on the wrong person's door. So in the Delgado instance, we just kind of get bits and bobs. You go into the garage.
Garage is like the gold mine of clues.
Yes. Yeah. So it doesn't matter if you don't discover this, I found out straight away.
Oh.
She will tell you in question 3.
Yeah, that he went into
and
the
then
garage.
You can use that information. Now, in the garage, diplomatic plates. So, I mean, already.
You got the flag.
And what I found funny is that he's got all these license plates in the box, and he's just nicely placed the diplomatic one on top.
Right on top.
Yeah, just
didn't even have to root around for it.
Two packard wheels. Now, if it was one, it would have been like, you know,
an ordinary person
would have been like, yeah, that's it, we've got it. But because we noticed that there was no spare wheel, two.
Two, yeah.
Excellent. Why would you only take two of the wheels? Was it? Mm-hmm. It was because, I guess it's because Oswald Jacob came out and started.
Yeah. Well, what is he said? Tutoring and hollering.
Tutoring and hollering.
And shouting profanities
in Mexican.
So, to be honest, I would just shout at him.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we get these clues. There aren't many other things. I mean, the bedroom didn't actually have anything.
But I found the note. Did you find the little pad on the floor?
Yeah.
Don't know what that was about. I thought that would be very, very helpful.
I thought it was broken because I was rotating it as you're doing it. And I was like, why isn't it zooming in? Why isn't it zooming in? I think it was Bible verses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because there's a Bible on the side.
Yeah, because I tried to read it as best I could. And, I mean, Eleanor was a beautiful game, but the resolution on some things is a little low. And so, you know, I saw the word Bible on it.
Oh, okay.
And there was, like, the names of some, I'm not particularly religious, but I didn't recognise the names, but I noticed that some of them, like John, and then it had some numbers.
Oh, okay, so like the verses. Yeah,
that's what I think it is, anyway. And so, them interview Ana Rodriguez. I found this to be the most difficult part.
Really?
Because basically, she's got this, I felt it really difficult to interpret due to, she's very angry and defensive from the get-go. I mean, she's just experienced Bukowski's, like,
racism.
Yeah, just plain racism. And I just found it really hard to read because she was giving off all sorts of facial sort of impressions because she was angry and annoyed rather than because she was lying. Oh, that's how I read it.
Yeah.
So I used an intuition on one of these questions. So I used two intuitions in this mission, which is really bad because I only gained one back. She tells us basically, we have to really get it out of her. I don't think she really tells the truth.
No, you're going to kind of coax her.
She tries to lie and say he hasn't been there. So you've got a plethora of evidence. You've got the breakfast plates, the Argentine flag, the stuff in the shed. Like, she's just got no defence. But she tries it and fails.
I used the plates because I thought plates was kind of the obvious thing.
The plates is
if you're going to sit down at your breakfast table and there's two plates.
Do you know, neither of them finish their breakfast.
I think it's a piece of toast on it. Yeah. Whatever else is on the plate.
Cole should have had a bit of that. You
know? That's evidence, that is.
True. But yeah, so Ana Rodriguez tells us in the end that he's at, Gabriel is at a street race in this candy apple red speedster. And that's basically all we get. You know, I feel really bad for her because she just gets threatened for like five minutes and then she just gives up that he's at a street race.
Right, yeah.
And so then we basically, you've got no other options. Now you have to head over to the street race. Paul, tell us what happens when you arrive at this street
race. So you arrive and there's a green car, a blue car, the red car, and I think a black car or something, another colour. And they're all racing.
And the most high-quality NPC I've ever seen
in this
game,
yeah.
She's wearing this beautiful scarf and she's waving the flag.
Yeah.
But she is higher quality than anyone else
probably
in the game.
Probably the cars are less quality than that.
I don't know why. I think maybe it's a DLC mission. They thought we could show off a bit. So the race starts.
Right,
and they're just trying to get away from you. Now, this is goofy. I always find this goofy. This is why I didn't take many notes from it, because I struggle with these.
The rubber band situation in this game is horrendous.
No matter what speed you go, they go exactly the same speed, so they could just be a bit in front of you, because I slowed down at one point and they were still at the exact same distance in front of me. But the black car gets ruined.
Yeah.
So it hits like a truck or something.
Yeah, it comes out.
It's gone.
Yeah.
The green and the blue car, I was doing a bit of swerving.
Well, they tried. They were really aggressive against me. They were super aggressive to the point where I had to bash them out of the way and total their cars.
So I didn't total. I got one of them, but I didn't hit the other one in time. So it veered off and I went down into the viaduct thing. Yeah.
Now that's a sharp corner. Many of times when I have played this mission, I've hit that corner and I've just had to go.
To paint the picture, this, you're on a main road.
Yeah.
This is a two-lane street.
Yeah.
This is an avenue. And Gabriel goes across the road and down onto like the runoff to a viaduct, which is very thin. But the corner is 90 degrees.
I can just about fit your car.
And the car, it will just back. So you can't overshoot, can't undershoot, because you're going to ruin that car. And then you chase him down the viaduct.
Now, my car got totaled on this.
I lost the point.
So it came to a point where I was trying to hit him and I completely missed. And in the viaduct, you've got the water that kind of goes through. There's loads of barrels. I hit the barrels and apparently that was it for my car. My car just went, I'm just going to stop. I just stopped and never worked again. So I had to replay the mission.
Our first fail. Yeah. Our first mission fail.
Cars were shoddy in the 40s, okay? They looked lovely, but...
So, I mean, I got to the end of the viaduct, and you do the jump, right?
Yeah.
L.A. Noire is a great game, but the physics, it never got quite right. So this beautiful candy apple red speedster just immediately drops to the ground. It does not fly.
My car landed on top of his...
But did that total his car?
Yeah.
So his car always gets totaled if it hits the train.
Yeah.
But you can total it before. And I overshot his car. But he's still totaled because he hit the train.
Okay.
But then, the worst part was, I was crashed quite far away, so I had to run. And he had got out of the car by that point.
And you started to run as well.
Oh god, I'm going to have to chase him.
Yeah.
But luckily, if you get your gun out, it immediately ends.
That's basically what happened to me as well.
Because did he stay in the car for you?
No, he got out and tried to run as well. Yeah.
Okay, so at least we both had that little slight cock-up. But that's fine. We caught him. The end of the mission, actually...
It's really abrupt.
It is.
For me, yeah.
It just kind of, he gives, you know, swears about Valdez, and then it just kind of ends.
Yeah.
Which is odd, because, like, when we were talking about Adrian Black, there was so much stuff that happened at the end, you know, we got a proper cutscene at the end, and this
was a DLC mission, I thought we'd be pushing a bit further.
I guess they're limited, they can't tell stories.
Yeah.
Because
they don't know where they're going to place
it. Because the story already existed, you know. So that was an interesting, it was a very abrupt end.
Yeah.
But you don't interrogate him. So he's the only character. I haven't written anything down about him or his
age.
I
felt like this whole thing was built around finding out who he is, where he works, what he does, and why he's stolen all this stuff.
I guess it's beyond reasonable doubt at that point.
Yeah.
And you've got him on the street race anyway.
Oh, there you go.
And that sort of stuff. At the end of the mission, there is a quote. And I don't think I've got it. I have. It's written under the section called End.
End.
Captain Neary, who is, I think, my favourite, like, central, like, head office kind of guy.
Oh, wow.
The guy from the police station. He's really nice. Comes up, he says, that's textbook policing. You know, he describes, you've arrested this guy. That's textbook policing. We need more of it in this department, right?
Yeah.
Brilliant, like, closing. Made me feel good about myself, you know.
That's the same thing as well. If you don't interrogate...
Yeah, so did he still talk about that?
What I can remember, he basically went along the lines of saying, we got this guy, you got that guy, that's great work,
so
I need more of that stuff.
Even though you didn't interrogate
him. He gave me credit.
I'll
take credit for not doing work.
You know, I'm grafting hard. And you know, you're getting
I'm just missing out people. Like,
yeah, but that's basically where it ends. I haven't got any other trivia really for this one, because there wasn't much.
No.
But what car did you drive in this one?
It's the standard one. Wait, I tell a lie. Drove it to the Packard.
Yeah.
And because I was like, what are you doing me? Piece of work. Right, I'm going to steal your Packard. So I stole a Packard and I just drove the Packard for the entire time, even up into the street race. And then, when you have to change car, it changes car for you.
The street race automatically changes your car back to the standard detective car. You get zero choice in the matter.
It's ridiculous.
I drove a Chevrolet Fleetmaster.
Oh.
But I say I drove. I was still skipping the driving.
Wow.
Because, you know, I've got important...
Bukowski drove the car.
Yeah, I've got important notes to write here. I mean, Paul, you can see my notes are very, very well organised.
I know.
They weren't rewritten. Definitely not going to show you the original notes. But yeah, so let's get on to our last bit where we're just going to, in this very last section, talk about the scores that we got, because that's an important part of this. And then also we're going to talk about what's going to be going on in the next mission. So join us for that in just a second.
So, we're going to come down to scores.
Yeah.
Because I did it.
Just to introduce to people who this may be their first time listening to this podcast. In L.A. Noir, there is a 5-star scoring system.
Out of 5, yeah.
There are a number of clues. You know, you get how many clues did you get? How many questions did you get right?
Vehicle damage, injuries.
Vehicle damage, injury damage, injuries caused, and street damage. So, Paul... What were we saying?
I got 4-star. Because I missed out interrogating him, I guess. That's kind of the key to the puzzle, I guess.
That's the 5-star. So,
yeah. You
know, I'm pretty smug here. I got 5 stars.
Mm.
Valorous.
So clues, obviously, I got... There's 17 available. I got 16. So I've obviously,
what did you miss?
Well, obviously, because I didn't interview him, I didn't get that link between him and
yes.
Gabriel.
Yeah.
So I missed that.
Okay, so
questions again, out of 10.
Out of 13?
I got 10.
So, there were 3 questions
for
Valdez.
And then the one that I got wrong was with Dewey.
So you got 9 out of 10.
So I got 9 out of 10.
So I got 17 clues, only because I did that interview, so I got the last clue.
Yeah.
And I got 13 out of 13 questions. But I used 2 intuition points, you only used 1. So... Really, we're basically on par. And then vehicle damage, I got 0 because I don't drive
the
car.
So, what happened was I was like speeding to the street race because I was thinking they're going to start without me. I need to be there. So I went up the hill. So you have to go up this hill.
I wouldn't know.
So you have to go up this hill before you get to the street race. And for some strange reason, the Packard was just like, what hill? I'm just going to fly. Let's get there as soon as possible. So it flew. Like you said, the mechanics and the physics on it are absolutely shocking.
Yep.
You might as well just throw yourself in the air at this point. And it came down and it hit a car. So I got $1,850 of damage.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's just vehicle.
That's just
vehicle. Any injuries?
No injuries.
Okay.
Everyone was fine.
I had... $30 of street damage.
I also had $30 of street damage.
What did we break?
It was probably during...
No, the street race scene, was on the wiki, so it's the damage caused on the street race scene doesn't count towards the damage.
Oh, okay. Probably
I didn't drive, so what happened?
What's Bukowski doing?
Yeah,
this is the person we should be asking.
Yeah, we need to get him here.
So I got 30, so yeah.
So, you know, I think you would have got 5-star if you would have
interrogated
Valdez. So that's it for the console's car. A short mission, fairly short mission.
DLC. So.
Yeah, I mean, compared to the last one, which did feel like it was going on a bit.
But
the thing is,
glasses,
I mean, when we get to Homicide, these are going to be hour-plus missions.
Yeah.
Like, there's no escaping that. I thought it was a good mission.
Yeah.
Less confident.
The only thing that really lets it down is, like, the end. Because
the end's
I understand you've got him, street race.
Yeah.
Everything basically points to him, but it would have been better if there was, like...
An interrogation.
Or even just a story bit to close it together. So, you know, you see, you pull him out of the back of the car... And then you send him in, and then he comes in and goes, that's textbook. What, like, something that just coherently joins it, because all he does is get back in the police car and it basically just ends.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
I tell you what I liked it. Ridiculously zany characters.
Yeah.
I mean, Oswald Jacobs, He could have a mission on his own.
He should have his own TV show.
Yeah, I would watch it. It'd be slightly racist, but, you know, I'd watch it. I'd sit through it.
Mr. Rogers.
It's no Mr. Rogers, yeah. William Dewey was just a piece of work. Yeah. But it made it good because these are characters that you kind of really hate. So it's good because, you know...
You get a lot of those,
You get more into the interrogation side of things. But that's it. That's our second case on Traffic done. And our next one is one that is a bit renowned, actually. It's one of the lower... You know, so LA Noir tracks community stats. And it's one of the lower pass rates. It's not the lowest, though. And that is A Marriage Made in Heaven.
Yeah.
And so this is one from the standard games, not DLC. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope you're looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it as well. It's a good mission.
It's a good mission. There are some other interesting characters coming up, but not quite as weird and wacky as some of these guys. Do look forward to that in our next episode, which will probably be in about a week or two, depending on what happens. You know, we set out this very rigorous schedule, didn't we? We were like, we're going to do it once every two weeks. And it just kind of went...
out of the window, yeah.
But it's fine. So, thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this episode of Under Review. My name is Thomas.
My name is Paul.
And until the next time, see you all.